Who was that? Jeff says. That was Nocturnes by Grieg. Nocturnes by Grieg. So, hi everybody. Thanks for coming. About a month ago, Kayla and I started talking about wanting to do some kind of concert together. I wanted to share some poetry for one last time, and Kayla wanted to share some music, I think, for the first time. So, I have a few poems to start out with, and I didn't end up doing as much writing this year at Holden as I wanted to. I think, though, that when I leave, I'm going to have this pouring out of poems. I think it's composting right now. It's going to come out as full-fledged poems, I think, when I leave. So some of you may have heard these before, so forgive me for repeating them, but they're new to some people, too. So this first poem is called Green, and as we're welcoming the fall, maybe this is kind of a memory of summertime green rather than the colors that we have now around us. Today I am a thing of green, like a solstice or a bead. I luxuriate in sprouted dense apparel, a fevered tango before the jungle opera begins. I wade in cool, mossed pebbles or in heated water reeds, depending on whether or not the sun is in the waltzing mood. If you breathe me, I weave prayer shawls and sweet greenhouses into your lungs. I am a hula skirt. I am mermaid sweat. I am a thing of green, like a 2-inch Buddha or a bud. I live in the shadow of a cemetery stone and bid the spirits good roaming, scattering rosemary along their airy path. When you invite me to a luncheon, I bring pea pods and peppermint and alligators. I sing soprano in a choir of August rain, kissing young ginkgo beneath its leafy clothes. I am a lifeboat, and I am the last thing a caterpillar sees before she retreats into herself, spinning toward reincarnation. This poem I wrote in January here, a little bit inspired by the books that I was reading, the books that were being read by the J-term class that was here. It was a class of women from St. Olaf who were reading books on women's spirituality. So this is a poem called Spirituality. Does it sit in that small space of air between your hands folded in prayer? Is it in your marrow or is it your armor? Do you touch it like untouchable cold museum marble? Do you bury your tears in it, grow gardenias, and whisper, Hallelujah? Do you ride it like a hurricane or a weather vane? A rodeo or a carousel? Do you walk it like a tightrope with tippy, shaky, shivered step, with arms outstretched, with 10 Bibles balanced on your brow as the Sistine ceiling curves overhead and Dante's rings crackle below? Does it float in holy water, bath water, the Nile? Does it visit you in temple, on prairie, beside death, inside birth, beneath sheets, under constellation, and without hesitation? Does it require you to travel 1,000 gravel miles on your knees? Does it expect you to say please? Is it painted on cathedral halls, on faces of the congregation, on white walls of meditation? Does it fill you, mend you, send you out with grace? Is it mantra? Is it mood? Is it icons? Is it food? Is it crosses? Is it bliss? Is it kisses? Is it myth? Miracle, canticle, nativity, nirvana, bead, creed, petal, plea, resurrection, reincarnation, smoke, chime, chant, cycles, idols, totems, symbols, rain, wind, flame, dirt, drum, drum, drum. She was pregnant with her second baby. It's called Little Girl Mommies. And Kelly and I have grown up together since we were babies, so Little Girl Mommies. I see you with your neatly round fullness under loose flared shirts and stretch pants. And I remember when we were 7 and 8 wearing spotted halter tops and bikinis on straight-lined bodies, cartwheeling through sprinklers with flat stomachs as reflectors for the sun. I remember us on the front patio eating orange popsicles, potato chips with ketchup, and grape pop. And today I see you pour milk and fix vegetables, ensuring the healthy multiplication of baby cells, a lovely intertwining of maternal attention and magic biology. I remember us in light 90s, taping wings to our backs, tiptoeing across couches, whisper singing, angels flying in the sky. An unearthly game alighting us into dreams. But tonight I watch you huff and shuffle to your room, where gravity and a heavy belly anchor you to bed. And now I see you are a mother with a sweet daughter and newly born boy. And I remember how we sat in miniature rocking chairs, smiled with our baby teeth showing, held our dollies tight with arms thin as dandelion stems, and pretended we were mommies. And the last one I'll share for now, I'll do a couple more later, but this one is called Grounded. And I think this is my favorite thing that I've written. I wrote this last summer when I was taking a trip out to Chicago to meet or to visit a friend out there, and I was definitely fleeing from Minneapolis because I was having a rotten summer. So just getting out of the city and going driving through to Chicago. When I find myself stuck in slow motion, melancholy muck, doing achy self-conscious, pulling my emotional muscles funk, in the pain tangle, love mangled, city in my face, memory dangling off of every place. Yeah, when I find myself like this, I want to be displaced. Hitch on an eastbound cumulus or a flappy little tail of a storm cloud and just let myself drip drop down through the lazy horizontal arms of afternoon gathering. Just lay myself splat flat down on a Wisconsin farm with my body 100 acres stretching, where the tallest things are cottonwood, steeple, silo, sky, and dragonfly. Where the noisiest things are legato wavelengths of landscape, and liquid sound waves of river, where the only problems to muddle through are solved in chewing cud, hoofing mud, and getting the last moo. Oh, here may my head be filled with dark dirt content. Here may I wear this solace like a chiffon leaf. May my old grief be dislodged by boulders and the corn-silk curl comfort round my shoulders. May the petty child of jealous mind be eclipsed by clover, and all the bicker brain chatter be hushed. Be hushed, and may I sink lower. Till me, fill me, plow me through, plant me deep, weed me, seed me, roust me out, sprout me in, flood me, flip me, wash me down, sunny side up, and I am grounded. Kayla's going to do another piece on piano for us.
I'll take my turn to greet you all first. It's really comforting to see so many friendly faces here. I just wanted to thank you for coming. I'm going to play a piece called Romance. It's written by, I'm no French major, but Jean Sibelius. Close enough? Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome G. Barnes to the poetry stand. I hear he's a great talent. I've never had the privilege of hearing him before, so I'm very excited.
Thank you for coming. I tried bifocals and I could neither see nor walk. Water news. The river's way is this. Some days it reports what's happened north. I go down the banks and sport limbs or wide clumps of bark chips shaped as amoebas or crates or palm olive bottles bobbing. Perhaps a piece of plastic toy. Another time I stop the car beyond the bridge and get out to read the news. Nothing. Nothing doing today, bub. I've been through 20 counties, but I have nothing to show, so stay or go away, please yourself. You know my motto. All the news that floats. I'm only water. Used to cross the confluences of the Little Arkansas and the Big Arkansas rivers in Wichita, Kansas, taking our kids back and forth to Montessori school. I used to cross those rivers, dropping Ann off at the firm where she worked. And because of the confluence and the rivers coming down from the north and the west, I crossed the rivers 14 times every day. So I used to stop and climb down the bank and see what the river brought me, see what was going on up north. Let's stick with water for a minute. It's a Holden poem from 25 years ago. Well, that's when the event happened, but the poem was written somewhat later. I don't think this needs any gloss. Jack and Becky refers to Jack Ledbetter, a poet who was here last summer. Mm-hmm. Maynard, some people may remember, was a carpenter many years ago. I think they're the only people named. The river obviously is Railroad Creek, but I can't get used to that being called a creek. It's a river where I come from. Riddles of the water and the ride. I can hear the river, and I can hear the rain tease tin roofs. I smell the dark, wet lumber stacked, new cut beside the only road, and taste brown, bitter coffee cooling in the morning air. I sit an oaken captain's chair, high on the porch, feet upon the rail. Geraniums bloom red on leafy green below, and yellow boxes neatly set in windowsills. A hammer rings over in the shed. Some kerchiefed girl strides off to make the bed's hugging linen white and warm yet from the dryers in the basement up the hill. Maynard starts the truck and backs her down the road. Fog slips up the valley, meeting snow, left forgotten in the pockets of the peaks. Small birds whistle from the pines, and small boys test small puddles with small feet. The carpenter waits a moment beneath a porch roof, tries the leather gloves, and steps out into the rain, coming just a little harder now. Eaves drip. The breeze picks up a bit. A window slams against the morning cold. A couple strolls by down on the walk, deep inside themselves in quiet talk I can't quite hear. And Jack and Becky slip from porch to porch, sharing the black umbrella brought from town. And half an hour later, I still hear the river fuller, wild and wide. A thousand raindrops join it. They ask, and river answers, those mountain morning riddles of the water and the ride. I have a confession to make. I fall in love with stupid-looking places. I fall in love with grand and glorious and majestic-looking places, too, but I grew up in small towns and on farms in Kansas, and we have a lot of dumb-looking places, and I love them. So in a sense, this is growing out of that kind of background, and also as kind of the armchair ecologist's answer to developers. So I like places where nobody would want to put anything, and they haven't. Excuse me. Something for nothing. Under caps of lumpy, frozen snow, the sage along the road has become cauliflower. The land lies in soft wrinkles, and the sky is pulled tight behind the mountains, dim and waiting at the horizon. It is snowing again. 30 miles ago, sheep and ponies stood together in a pen with thick, white shawls crusted to their backs. And we passed something black, frozen to the shoulder of the freeway. We considered turning on the radio, but I have Ian singing Double Diamond in my head and don't want to give it up. Seeing a particular rise in the land, I take to it. Remembering that feeling I've had before in other places, places unspectacular on the surface, that seem somehow holy anyway, and stay in me against all odds. All of it, the scrubby plants, the huddled animals, the snow in the road, the wind, the sky, the frozen land, strikes me as precious, handsome in ways I can't explain. I try. But you can't be blamed that the colors drained from your voice. I've heard the same from others. There's nothing here. And that is all. Well, I was driving across Nevada that time in a blizzard. Saddlebacking between two cornflakers, if you know truck driver talk, that's consolidated freight ways. And when they're on their little talkers, they call them cornflakers, they have a big CF on the side of the truck. The only way I was on that road at all was I was between two cornflakers. I could dimly see the headlights and dimly see, and you know, and follow in the tracks of the trucks. And I was driving with a colleague, a companion, who was kind of occasionally waking up and looking out the window, and I was saying, isn't this great? And the person was saying, what? Sometimes I like to stick an original song in the middle of a poetry reading, and if I can move this mic, then I'll do that, and then we'll come back and do a couple of poems. I've always been astounded that the moon is an object of reflection for both religious and romantic purposes. And the song has some tricky pronoun switches in a couple of places. I hope I make them, because it attempts to kind of salute that way in which we think of the moon in different cultures and in different cultural anthropological times as either male or female. To pay tribute to those people that have influenced me a lot. This is for Walt Whitman. He doesn't know that. It's called It's One World, Walt. All along the train tracks in Japan, I saw the same weeds we have here. The train was old, and we moved slowly down our narrow line. We were many pressed together. Hanging from my leather strap, I felt harnessed to that ceiling. And humming a tune I slightly knew, I watched the weeds roll by. Then out in a field I saw, just short of some pines, Walt Whitman, the old loafer, stretched out on a knoll, scratching his open shirt. His belly and chest looked like the field. His hat lay on the ground. His smile looked like a wrecked circus train. He was propped up on one elbow. Seven crows grazed between us. One flapped and tugged at something and fell backwards on his can. Walt laughed and grabbed his round gray hat and threw it in the air, and it stuck in a pine bough and didn't come down. I watched his belly roll like a land surprised by earthquakes. Walt Whitman was immediately embraced by Japan, has never been out of print there. Zenists consider him to be one of the few Westerners to achieve Zen without ever studying it. I was in that state of being in my travels. When you're traveling alone, sometimes where you're exhilarated and exhausted, and this happens to me anyway, I don't want to ascribe this to you, where I'm exhilarated and I'm exhausted, but I have no emotion in the middle that really sort out like reality from fantasy. So I was kind of dozing, and this little Walt Whitman thing came to me. Okay, let's cut to this one. I mentioned Kansas. They say that if you let a Kansas poet have the poet in, they will always read a poem or two about Kansas. Cook stove for cows. Kansas is not like Iowa. Iowa puts every farm machinery piece under a shed and paints it white, paints the shed white. Not in Kansas. Cook stove for cows. Out here we like to loan our old stuff to our barnyard friends. We decorate their homes, their patios, their yards, with our pitched-out Kelvinators, rusty water heaters, Studebaker bodies, and old Philco radios. The horse drinks from the bathtub. Chickens roost on Davenports, goats foxtrot on bass boats, and pigs watch in vain a post-war Motorola. It's a good system. We spare ourselves the pain of parting with things we know and love, not adding to the growing landfill problem. And of course, we know how to use the good parts to mend machinery when it's down. So things do come in handy. But me, a thing I like is a way that sometimes you'll just come upon something that tickles your fancy. Like the other morning early, I rounded the corner behind my barn and found a group of cows bustling around the old cook stove, whipping up a batch of flapjacks and lowing real soft, "Home, home on the range," which is our state song, by the way. Two more, a shorty and a medium one. I want to say how grateful I am to Erica for including me in this evening's festivities, and again to all of you for your participation by being here. This poem was written on the occasion of being at my parents' farm with my family, and my children and I decided we wanted to put a windrow in between the house and the wide yard, after the house and the wide yard, and then there's a highway. I mean, it's called a highway. Four cars and 17 pickups a day go down it, that's it. But we needed a windrow, basically, to keep the sound down. And so we went up to the meadow and brought down some cedar trees. I didn't know when we were doing that. So The we, and it refers to my children and me. The woman refers to, the woman called woman, refers to their grandmother. And I didn't know when I was writing this that the last two lines, beginning with the word cedars, attempts to prove a metaphor that that the trees are like, in fact, like children. Big cedar dreams. We set out seven cedars. Down from the pasture we had brought them, October, November maybe, carrying shovels, pails. We snugged them into compost-laden holes, watered, tamped dark earth around each tree. Then pounded stakes to guard against summer mowing. We showed them to a woman, talked about how husky we thought they would become. She knows that you cannot own, that you can only move and then hope for. I think rather than read the most recently published piece, I'll read the most recently written piece. It's quite recent, but I'm enthused enough about it to do that. This was written about a month ago. Saturday, September, sunset, Kansas. 90 brown plain martens measured out along a rope. Beads strung upon this prairie telephone line. Each narrow breast is turned towards our road. Every pecan nut brain and every head swelled with bird dreams of wild winging soon. While feasting on mosquitoes midair, snap rolling, exploding in every direction. 5 miles above, an unseeable jet struggles west, contrail fingers scraping hard against the azure canopy, the dome of the one world of us all. Near these scratchings, the moon is a farmer's thumbnail paring, or God's. And we are all of us hung, clinging, wind at our backs, suspended, just ahead of real dark. We wait on a merciful meal. Just enough, at least, to tug us into whatever sleep awakes, when our own moments ripen perfectly, when our own moments ripen perfectly and burst without a sound. Thank you very much.
A third and final piano piece from me, written by Debbie Say. It's called Arabesque, and I'd like to thank Erica for turning all my pages. Thank you.
thanks to Deanne for doing the lights and the sound for us tonight. And thanks to Michelle Braley and Kayla for the rugs. And to Jeff, who will be playing guitar for us after I read a couple more pieces. So I've been here for a year, and I have done some journal writing, even if they haven't turned into poems yet. And so I went through my journal yesterday and this afternoon and plucked out a few bits and pieces to fit into kind of a four seasons look at the year here. So from autumn to summer, here's some journal writings. Autumn. At 6 o'clock a.m. in the Cascades in late October, the halved moon has traveled just more than half the sky. The sun hasn't even begun to think about this valley, and the constellation Orion is standing bold and cocky on top of Copper Mountain, aiming his arrow at the running night. Orion is not a hunter who hides, but even though his starry attire should camouflage him, his flashy belt gives him away. Still, it makes no difference if he's hidden or not, since the other constellation creatures cannot rotate across the sky any faster than he can. Orion is set, firmly and forever, in his place within the concentric circles of star patterns, hunting and spinning, spinning and hunting, standing on the mountain as he passes through our valley, just like this, until his bow snaps or the stars burn out. Winter. Some come easily. I flew up a mountain the other day. It was my first overnight winter camp trip. We snowshoed through the valley, heading west toward Heart Lake. Unrecognizable forest under so much snow. No trail. Saw a white rabbit. Stopped to eat carrots and peanut butter sandwiches. The last half mile is a steady, long, uphill trudge over the icy-crusted slopes of avalanche chutes. This is where I flew. The wind was so insistent, so tough, with my big backpack acting as a sail on my back, I thought the gusts would sweep me off, snowshoes dangling off my boots. So as I put one step firmly into the crust, then another, I raised my arms and just flew with it. Some steps come easily, others you have to fly through. Spring. To sit on the porch, viewing layers of snow from within layers of wool, is to be witness to nature undressing herself from the sequined costume of winter and slipping into the slightness of spring. Snow is piled and oozing through the railing of my second floor porch. And there is stillness within the vertical motion of precipitation, an indecisive snowfall which sometimes shape shifts into rain. The atmosphere is teasing the freezing point. But the snow, slowly edging over the eaves, has made up its mind. Melt. So I am surrounded, saturated with the incessant sound of melt. Summer. After dinner, I dragged an Adirondack chair across the village green and slouched down into it. My eyes follow the line of the mountains carefully, like the closeness of a small sewing stitch. The clouds move swiftly across the brows of buckskin and copper. They are teasers, these clouds, these gathered particles of air and water, because they are so light-footed and breathy compared to the stoic immobility of the mountains. What a wild opposition, a geography of ancient earth and rock, roots firmly holding the masses of mountain in place, countered by flighty, fickle clouds that are entirely temporary and loose-figured in nature. My life's been loose lately, too, but I trust that this is unfolding the way that it's supposed to. These are puzzle pieces being set out, not necessarily next to their matching, synchronizing neighbors. There's a bigger design beyond these confusing, lonely, crazy-edged pieces. Am I supposed to be the puzzle fitter, responsible for laying out the parts? Or am I merely the tabletop, accepting and trusting what is placed? Mysterious game. That's the Four Seasons. And my final poem is the very first one that I wrote 2 years ago in the summer of 95 here at Holden. And I had written a few things before that, but I really consider this my first poem effort. So it's kind of dear to me in that way, and I haven't tried to change it or edit it or anything because I like it in its form. I wrote it with having in mind the artistic things that I was trying to focus on that summer to, I don't know, lighten my spirit or something. So you'll hear the references to all the artsy things I was trying to do. It's called Weaving Venus. I am weaving Venus from silky string that is thick, damp blue, wavy, warm maroon. She's gonna spread across you, outlining your contours with her fibers, if she's in the mood. I am wrapping her around my torso and soaking into her sensuality. I am molding from this red-brown clay a nice round Eve. I am giving her good wide hips. She's got to give birth to a whole species after all. She's the first woman womb mama. She's the new woman born on a mountain. And I am endowing her with heavy, strong thighs. You'll know she's coming when she thunders through the forest, shaking snakes from the trees. I am singing, eyes closed, looking inward, but my mouth wide open, singing with Shekinah, the feminine face of God. She fills my throat with melodies, harmonies, rhapsodies, rhythms of self-confidence, crescendos of strength. I am singing fortissimo with a lioness in my lungs, raging, growling, hungry. I am singing dulce with the spirit of acceptance, gratefulness, peace. Hallelujah, Shekinah. I am dancing with the phoenix, a tango of renewal, a boogie of rebirth. I am rising from the ashes, from where I was burned down and buried alive. And now I am leaping with the phoenix, circling heat, conquering flame, gaining power from pain. She is a fearless partner and fireproof. And I am spinning myself into Wonder Woman. I am just a whirling blur of red and blue and star as I fly past you, easily jumping over any wall in my path, laughing as I lasso my future. With my trusty gold wrist cuffs, I am deflecting the bullets of your misfired, misdirected expectations of me, judgments of me, and control over me. This is Wonder Woman you're dealing with. Thanks. Going to close the night with four songs. Kayla's going to sing the first. It's called Time of Inconvenience.
I'm going to use the other microphone. This is a song written by Nancy Griffith. Time of Inconvenience, as Erica mentioned. It's interesting. It's got some political overtones that you might want to pick up on. Referring to the feminist movement and looking back on that. And it's interesting, Nancy Griffith is sort of a folk country singer. And I don't know much about her, but she may or may not have been a feminist. So this could be interesting in that light as well.
Colvin sings on her album that's all cover songs. So this is a song by Robbie Robertson. And we were talking about this song earlier and thought that maybe it has to do about possibly people going off to war and the way that you lose your intimacy, your connection with someone when you lose them to war. And trying to figure out how to keep that intimacy.
Over by the wildwood, it was a hot summer night. Lay in the tall grass till the morning light comes shining. If I had my way, I would never get the urge to roam. Sometimes I serve my country, sometimes I stay at home.
Thank you.